Hello and welcome to another episode of the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is Sean Gaylord. I'm so grateful that you are here joining us. And that is correct. That is a plural pronoun here. And I'm very grateful that I have one of my favorite school leaders, one of my favorite leaders here with us that I've known for quite some time. And I'm grateful to have Bobby Policino here with us. He is the head of upper schools for Bullis School in Potomac, Maryland, which is kind of near my old stomping grounds. I went to school and did my grad and undergrad in Washington, D.C., and I know that area very well. Bobby is also the author of a great book, which came out of the Road to Awesome publisher, Darren Pappard, and that is the Principal Leader. And I was very honored that Bobby asked me to endorse this book. And I'm also honored that Bobby has agreed to be on the Principal Liner Notes podcast. So Bobby, welcome, my friend.
Sean, thank you so much. Excited to be here. Really appreciate the work that you do for educators around the world and leaders, and just excited to chat with you today.
Well, we've got a lot of ground to cover, and I know in the podcast conversation that I do with guests, we were doing a little bit of principal commiserating and also some celebration as well, because there is great agony and ecstasy to the gig as being a principal. And so it was good to kind of like talk shop with you a little bit and to trade some ideas and thoughts. And so we'll keep that conversation going here. So I guess maybe just for starters, what led you to arriving at the writing of Principled Leader?
Sure. I had no aspirations to go into education. After college, I'd taken a college coaching job at the University of Delaware. And 2 weeks into that job, I got a phone call from a teammate's older brother. They were in need of a biology teacher at a boarding school in Virginia. Again, I'd never thought about doing that. Talked to the head coach at the time at Delaware, and he said, go down there, interview if you like it. Try it out for a year. See if you want to coach high school and teach high school. If not, come back and I'll have a job on the staff for you. So it was very kind of a coach up there in Delaware. And I fell in love with teaching. I really enjoyed it right away. And sort of just was on this path of a teacher coach and really enjoyed it. Didn't have leadership aspirations, so to speak, in the traditional way, outside of being a leader in a classroom and on the field. Found myself with an opportunity to be dean of students and assistant principal, and then this principal role. And I realized pretty quickly, the old adage of what got you here won't get you there. And so I just started listening to podcasts and reading more books and reading more articles about what good leadership looks like, what good leaders do. And just created this Word document that I was just sort of putting together to hold myself accountable, just because I felt my first year was a failure from my perspective as a principal. And so I was just working on this Google Doc for my own growth and development. And then March of 2020 hit, and we were all sent home. We thought for maybe a week, 2 weeks, maybe a month, but it turned out to be a lot longer. And so I found myself with a lot of time. I have three children. I'm fortunate to have them at school with me. So I wasn't getting them up anymore. I wasn't making breakfast. I wasn't getting them out the door. So all of a sudden I had an hour and a half every morning before sort of online school started. And I thought, let's go back and revisit this and see what this Google Doc might be. And so I used the spring and summer of 2020 to put all of this together, and was very fortunate to connect with Darren and wrote his Road to Awesome team and sign a publishing deal. And the book was released in December of 2022. So felt really fortunate to have the time and then to connect with Darren.
Wow, that is quite a unique journey. I'm always interested in the behind the scenes, if you will, of books and albums and movies, and I'm always intrigued at the creative process. You know, one of the things, and you know, in the book, and we talked, and actually we talked a little bit at the in the pre-podcast conversation about lessons. Mm-hmm. I shared with you. You kind of shared a lesson that you've kind of held true to as a leader, and I would love for you to talk about that, and then maybe we can get into some of the leadership lessons from Principal Leader. But I, if you could, I'd love for you to kind of share that lesson that you imparted to me, which got me down a whole great rabbit hole of thinking about a leadership lesson from my dad and all that.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two parts to what I had shared. The one, you know, or the question to me was, when are you going to realize you're on the other side of the table? And, you know, I had responded, I'm not. You know, just because, again, I had never thought I'd be down this path and always wanted our teachers and students and families to feel supported by me, and that it wasn't a negotiation across a table. But the other part of that, as I said that, on the one hand, was a question from that same boss around, do you have your finger on the pulse of your faculty? And I said, no. And I said, it's not because I don't care. I said, it has a lot to do with my upbringing and my experience. My dad was a Vietnam vet. He was wounded in Vietnam, was in the United States Marine Corps. You know, so for our house, feelings weren't always the most important. You did what you were supposed to. And for me, you know, I just expected teachers to do what they're supposed to, regardless of how they feel. And that's not a way to lead. That's not a way to support people. And so I had to step back and take a look at that and realize if I'm going to sit here and say this isn't transactional, and I'm going to sit here and say it's not going to be across a table and negotiation, but it's actually going to be a relationship, then I have to actually live that. And I have to start making deliberate choices about the words that I use, my body language, my conversations, my tone, all of those things. And that was really sort of a page turner for me. And was glad that I'd had that opportunity to reflect on that in the moment. It's sort of why I picked the quote from Zeno for the introduction of the book, right? I made a prosperous voyage when I suffered a shipwreck. And I think that's part of my first year was that shipwreck.
Yeah. I mean, when, you know, often when we talk about, in the gig of education, we talk about that first year as a teacher. We all have those moments.
Yeah.
But what's often and I know Todd Whitaker has talked about this in his great book, What Great Principals Do Differently. Mm-hmm. He talked a little bit about his first year as a principal. And those are stories that often don't get shared. The first year as a principal, there are things looking back at my first principalship and first year that I'm like, oh man, I can't believe I did that, or I said
right.
that, or I reacted or responded in that way, and the Zeno quote is such an apropos beginning. But to circle back just a little bit, Bobby, you mentioned how it's important for us as leaders to keep our finger on the pulse of things. Mm-hmm. What are some of those things that you do as the leader, as the head of upper school? What are those things that you do? You know, maybe they're habits or routines or rituals that you have to do to keep to kind of keep a finger on the pulse of the faculty that you serve.
Well, I think it starts with ourselves first. And I think so many of us in education got into this field to serve others and to give back, and oftentimes at our own detriment, whether it's with our own families or with our own health and well-being. And I appreciate the fact that so many of us now in this field and in others realize that if we're not taking care of ourselves, you know, we cannot be of service to others.
Right.
And so I would say that has been a key part for me, because this idea that you have to be able to manage the internal if you want to be able to manage the external. You know, so what are you doing for yourself? You know, I enjoy seeing your Twitter posts of your inner peace you're getting at the gym when you put those out. And so for me, it starts with a personal morning routine where I'm up at 4:30 to do my exercise, whatever that may be, whether it's biking, running, training jiu-jitsu, lifting weights, and then a breathing routine, and then a meditation routine. And then I follow that up with a daily journal entry. And so by the time I'm in the car heading to school, I am focused, I am centered, I know where I need to be, and I can then be of service to my team to then see what's happening. And so from that point on, once you get to school, then it's about your calendar, right? You show me your calendar, I'll show you your priorities. And so on my calendar every day is going to be when I'm walking the halls, visiting classrooms, wherever it may be. And my assistant knows, and she'll ask sometimes, hey, your walkabout, somebody needs to see you. It looks like this might be the only time. And I'll say, let's see if they can do it later, because I need to keep that. You know, if it's urgent, obviously I'll have the conversation. But if it's not urgent, you know, I also talk about the tyranny of the urgent, you know, versus the important. What's important to me is getting in the classrooms, you know, seeing the kids in action, seeing the teachers in action. So making sure that I'm doing that, making sure I'm regularly attending our assemblies, our athletic contests, our art performances. It's been important to me over the years to stay in the classroom. It's been difficult in this role. And so I've sort of taken on more of a relief pitcher role. You know, when things happen, we had a teacher step out mid-year. And so I went in and took over the public speaking class. This past year, we had a new DEI director who was going to teach a leadership course, which I've taught before, and decided he and I would co-teach it, you know, to provide some different perspectives and lenses. And so that was important. You know, during our hybrid COVID year, it was important I wasn't in the classroom, so that when whoever called out sick when they needed to, which was on a daily basis, right? I mean, that's just the way it was. I could go and sub or be in a classroom if needed. So I think those are some ways to do it, is, you know, sort of the leading by walking and being visible and being present. And then also, you know, having weekly meetings with my direct reports. So making sure I'm meeting with my grade level deans, our academic dean, meeting with our counselors, our learning specialists, and just, you know, what's going on? How are things? What are you seeing? What are you hearing? Where do you need support? And being really mindful in those meetings of allowing the team to bring the agenda to me. I've always said, this is not my meeting. This is not my agenda. It's your meeting, and you set the agenda for us, because I'm just here, you know, to be that support person. And I've also been clear in those meetings too, that, hey, if something comes up that I have to address, if I need to give you some critical feedback, I'm not going to do it in that meeting. I'm going to set aside a different time to have that conversation, because I want this one to just be about you, what you need, what you're seeing, you know, you providing me with the information I need so that I can help you and help the school as a whole.
That's a powerful routine. And I love how you've connected it to that peace and balance, because that's my thing as well.
Yeah.
That you've got to, in order to be effective and in order for you to be fulfilled, you got to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, you know, you hear the old adage that folks in the medical profession aren't very good patients.
Right.
Well, leaders, we're not good at what we profess, right?
Yep.
And what we proclaim. You know, we tell you know, the folks we serve, family first, you know, take care of you. And we don't always, I know that I haven't always followed my own advice.
Right.
And I think the older I get in this gig and the longer I get in this gig, the more I realize, kind of to your point, you've got to take intentional time to fill your own bucket. You've got to take intentional time to do that. And I also love how you shared, hey, show me your calendar. I'm gonna show you your priorities. And that time has to be intentional to be present, to be visible. I'm excited about this upcoming year in that I, as much as I can try to stay out of the principal's office for a couple of reasons. One, to be visible and present, but I also spent so much time in the principal's office as a kid that I get a few flashbacks, man. You know what I'm saying? So, I've moved my office actually off of a room off of the media center. And I'm really downsizing that space, and I'm also sharing that space with a colleague. And man, all I need is a good pair of shoes, running shoes, to keep moving, and my laptop and a plug close by. And the school becomes the office, and I think that's important for leaders to do that at any level, to be present, to be visible, but also you have to schedule that intentional time. So you mentioned walkabout. So that is in your calendar.
Yep.
That you have intentional time to be present. You're not supervising, you're not evaluating, you're not doing a quick walkthrough. I'm just here.
Yep. Well, and I do usually send a quick email to the teacher after, and I put an email out before, good, you know, it's middle of September before I start, let everybody get comfortable. I'll put an email out and say, hey, you're going to see me popping in. Now, I want to see the work our kids are doing, and I also want to see you sort of in your element. And I'll just follow up with a brief, you know, 3 to 5 sentence email. Hey, I really enjoyed seeing this lesson on Hamlet, the way you had the students reading and engaging, well, you know, with what was happening there. Or, you know, it was great to see the lab. The students were really engaged, and, you know, and being specific with that feedback, right? Not just, you know, I enjoyed what I saw today, but what did I actually see that aligns with what we're saying we do as a school? Because that's what's so important, is that you are actively living your mission and your vision as a school.
So those walkabouts are in your ways, your it's your entry point into making sure that vision and mission is sustainable and living,
right?
And you're echoing that in some way in the feedback. Now, the other thing I want to ask you about with the meeting. So you literally, if you're in a meeting, there's no agenda. You don't set the agenda. You're asking folks to build the agenda. Is that something that is prior to, or
that's so
in
that's
the middle
for,
of, or how do you do that move?
So that's for my one-on-ones that I have weekly with, so I have 4 grade level deans. Mm-hmm. And an academic dean, and meet with each of them individually weekly. And I'd say, so for 30 minutes, and say, you set the agenda for that meeting. So for our full faculty meetings, I'm setting the agenda. There's another weekly meeting I have with our learning specialists, our counselors, our grade level deans, where we meet to talk about kids that we have concerns about, you know, and maybe a counselor heard about a cancer diagnosis that, you know, and of a family member, or maybe, you know, there's a student that has another challenge that they're facing, whatever it may be, where we're just having a conversation. Okay, who's the point person for this, and who's going to take the lead on this? And so for that meeting, the folks that have the specific concerns about students, they're making that agenda. So I'm just sort of facilitating that meeting and just saying, hey, here's where we are. It's been interesting because as we've grown as a school, the number of people in there have grown, and I've had to change the approach a little bit because, you know, I like the sort of Amazon idea. If 2 pizzas can't feed the meeting, there's too many people. And I have 15 people in this meeting, so 2 pizzas is going to be tight. Unless I do the old double cut like used to for a kid's party.
But that's true, man. I mean, you nailed it. I mean, yeah, I've never thought of it that way, but that is true.
So in that meeting, what I had to say was like, listen, if you don't have something to bring up, that's okay if you don't bring it up. Like, don't feel like you have to speak for people to think you're doing your job. Mm-hmm. So if the 9th grade dean has no students of concern for the entire group. Maybe they're having some of their side conversations. Maybe they've had some talks with me, but if they don't need to bring it up because it's not a school sort of wide issue, don't bring it up. And no one in here is to judge anybody if they don't have a student to talk about. Gotcha. Because otherwise, we 55 minutes, if you have 15 people in a meeting, if everybody spoke for 4 minutes, you're out of time already. You're already at 60. So, you know, we have to be mindful of how we use our time and how we're offering suggestions, ideas, advice, and what we're saying. You know, I think about, I can't remember his name, is comedian. He was talking about the lesson he learned with his third wife. And he said, before he responds to her, he says, do I need to say this? And do I need to say it right now? Ooh. Right? Just sort of stopping to think about that. Ooh. Right? And I think sometimes in a meeting, we might feel like we want to be heard. So we want to say it, but someone else around the table who maybe doesn't have your leadership role might have the same. Give it space. Give it time. See if somebody else can say what you want to say, especially if you have a question about someone's idea, because you asking a question can create an environment where, all right, well, Bobby doesn't like it, right? He asked a question, so that means he must not like it. So now nobody else is going to offer support. So really being intentional about how often you are leading a meeting that you're speaking and what comment you're making about what's been said.
Mm. That's powerful. That really is. We'll have to figure out if for those of you who are tuning in who know who that comedian is, if Bobby and I can't figure it out between the time of the end of our conversation, let us know. So in the principal leader, which I tell you, there are many takeaways I have from this book, and there are many things that have really resonated from me. One thing I would say is the book is like you. It is your authentic voice. Mm-hmm. You know, as I read this book, I'm like, man, this is just like talking to Bobby. Because
for better or worse.
For better. And I had forgotten, you know, too, that you do have a coaching background, and there's a little bit of that kind of feel that I get, like I'm in a huddle with you, or I'm in the locker room with you, and we're down, you know, however many points or whatever it is, and you're rallying leaders, you're rallying. I felt very much rallied in this book and uplifted in this
book.
Thank you. What are those? You know, what does it mean to be a principled leader? And I know, you know, there's a little bit of a pun there on the word,
right?
What does that mean in terms of the vision of your book for those that are tuning in?
Well, one of the challenges that we face in our field is that we often are promoting people in education because they do a really good job in their current role, and I think that we don't always give them the coaching that they need. Right, the great English teacher becomes a department chair. The great department chair becomes an academic dean or an AP. A great coach becomes an athletic director. And it's a very different role and it's very different responsibilities. And if you haven't stopped to think about what your core values are and what your sort of North Star and your principles are that guide your decision-making, you just float through this position and you're making decisions based on emotion, based on bias, based on baggage you're bringing with you, because you're not going back to whatever it is that got you there and knowing what those are. And that's why I talk in that book about sort of knowing what your values are. And I list my three core values that I live by every day, integrity, discipline, and courage, and why those are important to me. And then offering just these principles by which you can make your decisions, because otherwise we let circumstances dictate our decision-making and we shouldn't do that, because, folks that work in schools know that every day is different. And that's one of the beauties of working in a school. No 2 days are alike. And in some ways, we're very fortunate because some of those tough days we might not live through if we had to repeat it the next day. But going through that and just listing these principles and being clear in there that, you know, you're not going to follow maybe each one every single day. But if we think about, for example, you know, I mentioned gratitude in there, and I was very fortunate to talk to one of our friends, mutual friends, Lainey, and be in her book, Evolving with Gratitude, and sort of what that does to bring an attitude of gratitude every day and how that positively impacts your interactions. Because when you are frustrated, which we all become, when we're disappointed, we're angry, right? Those are all feelings that we have. But if your baseline is a feeling of gratitude, then before you make that decision, you're going to pause. You're going to reflect for a moment. You say, okay, what truly happened and what is the appropriate response? Not what's the emotional response, or what's the appropriate response? So having a clear sense of your core values and then having the principles to guide you, such as gratitude, or, you know, I talk about listening to understand, right? So difficult to find folks doing that today. When you turn on the TV, all you hear is people yelling over each other. They're not even yelling at each other. They're yelling over each other. You can't have a conversation when that's happening. So what are you doing to listen to people and then empower them? You know, as leaders, you just want to, if you just fix and solve problems for people, you're just going to keep getting more problems because you're the solution person. You're the one that's solving them. But by listening to understand, you're empowering your people to solve their own problems because you're helping them think through it, talk through it. And that's going to make them a stronger teacher, department chair, leader. Excuse me.
Oh, no, you're fine, man. That's beautifully said. One of the things I notice on, I think, because I'm fortunate to follow you on Twitter is you like me, we are consumers of content, as much as we like to put out content.
Yeah.
We like to read, we like to reflect, and I will occasionally, I'll do this during a workout sometimes, a thought will come to my mind, or if there's something I'm reading, I'll share that. And I know that you've done that as well. You've either shared a quote or something you've read in an article, and you've put it out there, and then you tie it to some level of action, whether it is a reflective question or whether it is again that kind of coach rally, you know, like, all right, y'all, let's, you know, what are we going to do, or how might we? So what are those things that are on your bookshelf or on your Kindle that inspire you? I'm always curious when I speak with leaders, you know, what are those things that you're reading that motivate you and get you going? And I know some of those are echoed in your book, Principal Leader.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the things that I feel is important for us in education is to look to leaders in other fields. You know, I certainly appreciate the books that our colleagues write, and I do think it's important that we learn from each other. I think that we have so much to gain from each other in education, and I truly appreciate the fact that so many folks in education believe there's enough sun for all of us, right? And that we can support and promote each other and collaborate in the best interest of our students and our faculty. But again, I also like to look at other areas. I read McKinsey articles almost daily, Harvard Business Review, take a look at that. In terms of books, you know, sometimes I do look to military to see, like Admiral Craven, for example, you know, some of his books, some of Jocko Willink's books, retired Navy SEAL. And then also looking at the business world, like Great by Choice, Jim Collins. I think, you know, there's some powerful messages in there, you know, as we continue to look at ways that we can grow and develop. But then also realizing that I think sometimes I do take myself a little too seriously around that, need to step back. So I am looking forward to reading Born to Run. I have not read Bruce Springsteen's biography. I'm going to read that when I get to the beach in 2 weeks. And then I'm going to see the Boss at Camden Yards in September. I've never seen him live, so I'm excited for that. I do think it's important that we sort of step back with our reading sometimes.
I agree. I am of the same ilk where I'm reading Harvard Business Review. I love to read, especially non-education books on leadership and culture and those things. And when I was at the beach a few weeks ago, I was not allowed to read any of those things. My wife and my daughters made sure that I was reading, I love music biographies. You mentioned The Boss. That is so cool, man. I guess maybe going on a few months ago, I don't know if you remember, I had Beth Napleton on, mm-hmm. On the podcast. She's a leadership coach. And she is a big fan of Springsteen. And I think she has seen The Boss 20 some times.
Oh, wow.
I forget, but it's worth revisiting that episode and following her work. So this will be your first time seeing The Boss, huh?
It will. I'm looking forward to it.
Let's just go there because it's music, man. That's part of this podcast as well. What is your go-to Springsteen album or Springsteen song? What is what are those pieces that you gravitate towards?
I think Born to Run, I mean, obviously, is a great one. I think, his, I just really enjoyed what felt like there, just this authentic sort of, here's who I am, which I think mm-hmm. is always the music that we resonate the most with. And I think that's sort of been, I guess you and I can probably get up on our soapboxes around today's music versus what it used to be, right?
We can.
Which seems more about sales and downloads than anything else. But I just, I feel like you could connect with them, maybe it's because I wasn't, that far from him. Obviously he's older than me, but growing up in upstate New York and him being in Jersey and probably a little bit of a connection there. But I think that's Born to Run's a tough one to beat.
That's true. And Camden Yards, that's a great place to see him and to be in that great ballpark and seeing someone who is an icon. And I'm with you, Born to Run, that's hard to beat. But then I would also say too, Bobby, that you nailed it, is Springsteen's work. He does not compromise.
Right.
So you have an album or a song like Born to Run, this anthem, and then, all right, I'm going to do an album like Nebraska, which is going to be very low key and quiet and subtle. He is very authentic to who he is as a musician. And I would also say he's very authentic to who he is as a leader and a lesson for us to be authentic to who we are. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
And I think that is scary at times, right? To say, sort of, how am I going to be received?
Yeah.
Right. And how much is appropriate to share? You brought up the coaching piece, and I used to think that there was no reason for the kids to know what the practice schedule was. And then I sort of brought that to faculty meetings I don't want the teachers to see the agenda ahead of time because, they're going to start judging, what we're going to talk about or whatever it is. And it was just, I think it's a sign, quite honestly, of immaturity. I think it's also a sign of insecurity, because if that many people really don't think we should be having the conversation, then maybe we shouldn't, right? Like, you feeling it's important. Now, maybe it is. There's going to be times where maybe there's going to be differing opinions on that. But, another friend, a colleague of ours, Stacey Roshan, who worked here with me for several years, she and I collaborated on sort of creating these Pear Deck agendas that were going out to faculty ahead of time that had questions people could answer or ahead of time or comments they could make or things like that. And just realizing that just sharing is a great way for people to sort of see who you are.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important and something that too many leaders are hesitant to do.
You made mention of two kind of folks that we have in common, and Lainey Rowell is dynamite. We're both kind of under Stacey Roshan as well. We're all kind of under her umbrella of evolving with gratitude in her book, and Stacey, who is one of my most favorite people in the universe, a great educator, great leader, great writer, great tech hero. And you, I love that kind of, and I'd forgotten about the whole Pear Deck thing and the faculty agendas and that collaborative aspect. I think that's important for administrators and teachers to kind of remember and go to lean on the other leadership and the other talent in your building. Again, I'm on the Springsteen kick now. You started it, man. Very much like how, even though it's Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, there are folks that he's leaning on. You look at the cover of Born to Run. He is literally leaning on Clarence Clemens, right? I think that's important for us, for leaders to remember, right?
Absolutely. We need to rely on those folks. We need to let them know that we need their support. We need to acknowledge when they give us that support and provide that positive feedback, and really recognize how we can go the furthest when we do it together.
Absolutely. The other thing, musically speaking, and I appreciate you in our pre-podcast communication, because I have I always have a question, like, what are you listening to? What are those things that are your go-to? And you made mention that you connect music with the work to be done. That statement just, and I won't get into the artist just yet, but what do you mean by that? It resonated with me in a big way.
Right. So for me, I just think about what the task is where my focus needs to be. So I think having some classical in the background when I'm working on a letter or something along those lines to the community, working on a meeting agenda, whatever it may be. Just sort of something quiet in the background that's there while I have this focused intent on what needs to be done there. Then there's other work that, I don't enjoy as much, like doing the dishes after dinner. My wife and I have the deal of whoever cooks, the other one cleans. Mm-hmm. So if that's happening, like I've said, I've put on some music that is going to take me to a different place where I, have some good memories or just sort of uplifting or thinking about that, usually a little bit quieter. I don't want to break any dishes, but sort of a little more mellow, things like that. And then in my morning workout routine, I want something that is going to be loud and motivating. And again, it's still connected to joy. Concerts I attended and or music of my childhood, but it's got a little bit more of a pace, faster pace and drum that's gonna, push me through in that hour.
Right on. And I appreciate your musical choices here. I mean, for your 90s rock for morning workout, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Metallica, Alice in Chains. That's some heavy stuff, Bobby.
It goes back to, I was at Lollapalooza in 92, Pearl Jam, Red Hot Chili Peppers, were there. That was quite a show, that I still, recall fondly. So enjoy thinking about that. And then Metallica on there, who I saw probably 15, 20 years ago, just put on a great show. And just, again, it's pumping music that's pushing you through in that workout.
I have a little bit of Zeppelin and a little bit of Beastie Boys, that and the Who. I fall more towards the classic rock, and I guess I wouldn't put Beastie Boys in that cat, although they've been around now, I guess.
That's so true.
If folks want to connect with you and follow you, through social media? What are those places that you want to be connected with?
I'm on Twitter at Bobby Policino. You could also connect to me through my email, bobbypolicino@gmail.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn, Bobby Policino as well. And then also have a website if anybody wants to subscribe to my biweekly newsletter, Principal Leader. You can subscribe through my website, bobbypolicino.com.
Yeah, your newsletter, and I recommend folks sign up for that, because your newsletter is just as refreshing and in-depth and intentional as your book, Principal Leader. And how, besides those venues, where can folks find your book and order your book, Principal Leader, pictured viewing?
They can order at Amazon.com. It's right there, Principal Leader by Bobby Policino. And certainly would appreciate folks taking a look. And thank you again to Sean for reading it ahead of time and endorsing. I really appreciated the feedback you shared and your thoughts on that.
Very, very honored, honored by that. Bobby, I am always fulfilled and enriched each time that we communicate. I hope that as you get into the beginning of the school year and all of the things that we as principals have to endure, I hope that all of your various missions are accomplished as you prepare for another school year. And I also, when are you seeing the boss? When are you going again?
It's in September.
Wow. So I expect a full report and review on that show. And I know it's going to be, because he does like 3 hours, man.
Yeah. Well, that's why I had to go to he was also coming to Nats Park around the same time. And I think that was on a Sunday before back to school meeting. So I had to opt for September on a Saturday. So I knew I could be my best self on Monday.
Yeah. That was a wise leadership move. That's very, very prudent. The philosophers are smiling down upon you right now for exhibiting some cardinal virtues there. So sure. I'm, again, very grateful that you're here. Folks, this is Bobby Policino. He is the author of Principal Leader. I really recommend, if you are looking for an intentional, reflective book from someone who is in the trenches and someone who does lead with his most authentic self, I do recommend this book. It's a good, quick read, but it's the kind of read that, you know, you go back and go, wait a minute, did Bobby just say that? Or in a good way, or like, wow, I gotta find out more about where this quote comes from. So Bobby, thank you so much for being here on the podcast.
Thank you, Sean. I really appreciated it. Take care.
Friends, this is the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is Sean Gaylord. Man, don't forget to share with the world your dreams and your visions and your ideas. The world needs them. And also the world needs you to lead with your most authentic self in service of others, just like my man and my brother, Bobby. Thank you so much. I hope to catch you on the flip side.